Well, good evening, everybody, or good morning, or good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world and where the space-time continuum is. One thing is for certain, though, it is time for another Constant Geekery podcast.
1.21 gigawatts? Great Scott!
I'm going to start the podcast after we've done those Back to the Future references, which weren't scripted at all. That just kind of happened. I've got to show the viewers this. And if you're not viewing the podcast, then it's youtube.com/theConstantGeekeryPodcast. Or, you know, listen on Spotify or whatever. If you are listening and not watching, then you won't be able to see that I'm holding up a lovely model of the DeLorean time machine, complete with a Mr. Fusion nuclear reactor on the back. And my son Benjamin bought that for me as a present. I was very excited by it.
We are indeed now connoisseurs of the Back to the Future films, aren't we?
We are. Well, it's the best film ever made. So
let's not. So
okay. So for some drinking action this week, I am not delving in the dark recesses of my cupboard for something disgusting. I've got a reprieve this week because my lovely wife bought me a bottle of, I want to say Arbalor, but I notice there isn't an R between the A and the B. So is it Abalor?
Abalor.
It's a whiskey is what it is. It's a Speyside single malt, which is my favourite kind of single malt. And this particular one is a 12-year-old that's been matured in two different casks, American oak and sherry oak. And those also are my favourite sort of casks. So I'm pretty confident in the fact I'm going to enjoy this significantly more than last week's shoplifted Chambord. So let me have a snifter. Oh, that is a nice dram. I'm going to enjoy that throughout the podcast. I'm sorry you can't enjoy it with me, Pete.
That's all right. I've got a almost drunk can of Pepsi Max. And I will just say that in this country, you're innocent until proven guilty. So the shoplifting charges, well, let's just say the authorities are pursuing various lines of investigation.
Okay.
But it will be worth it.
Are you helping them with their inquiries?
I'm assisting them. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Very pleased to hear it. Well, I got told off by my family, who apparently do indeed listen to the podcast.
Do they?
Whilst they're out in the car. And I got told off because...
Surely that's dangerous.
I would say it's dangerous to listen to the podcast full stop. Whether you're driving a car is immaterial.
Oh, no, but there's a danger of falling asleep at the wheel.
I got complaints anyway because we spent far too long on talking about food and drink and pubic hair. And not enough time talking about tech. So I'll tell you, it's quite something to have your 13-year-old say to your dad, can you have less talk about pubic hair and more talk about tech this week?
And to be fair, when we set up the Constant Geekery podcast, I'll confess, I never anticipated that we would be talking about that subject. But if you're curious, if you missed last week's podcast, because I noticed there's a lot of fresh subscribers this week, welcome aboard, thank you very much. Go back and listen. There is a tech connection, but I'm not going to ruin that lovely surprise for you. But yeah,
if all we did was sit here and waffle like two grumpy old men that we are, then I think people would get bored very quickly. You've got to slip in the occasional anecdote and experience just to liven things up.
Yep, you definitely have.
And to stop your wife from falling asleep while she's driving. My wife never falls asleep while she's driving because she's always too busy speeding, Pete.
Is she?
And now that I know that she listens to the podcast, I'm getting this in. Yeah. She does. If we go somewhere, you know, I like to ride my motorcycle. And if we go somewhere, sometimes I'll take the opportunity to ride the bike.
Yeah.
We might go out for a family day, but I'll ride the bike. And if she sets off before me, I never pass her on the way home.
No.
That's she always gets home before
it?
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if she is indeed listening in the car, Shell, sorry, don't know if I could say a name like that. If she is listening in the car, maybe just edit that
out.
Well,
she is called Shell, so I don't think she'll mind.
So if you're listening, obviously, if you're driving somewhere, make sure if the fuel line's getting low, just pop it on the drive. Dave will sort it out.
You're a scumbag. I can't drive at the moment, Pete. I'm not allowed to drive for another 2 weeks after my op. So
that would be a really
she'll
good,
have to put fuel in herself.
That would be a really good survey. How many people listening to the podcast find that their partners bring the car back with just like a whisper of fuel left in it whenever they've used it, and it's always falls to the other to fill it up?
Or just when you're on a family day out and you start up the car and you realise it's running on the memory of the petroleum that was once in the tank.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Okay. I think we should get at some tech. That's enough of an intro. But first of all, Pete, have you got some comments to go through?
From last week. So,
Sorry to interrupt. What we should do is whet the appetite of our listeners for, and that's whet with an H. So I should probably say whet.
Whet. Cool whip.
Whiskey.
Yeah. Will Wheaton.
What are we actually going to be talking about tonight? So we've got two main topics.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about a bit of retro computing, but we're going to do a nice little link into how it's connected to the M1 and ARM processors. So we'll see how that goes. We want to revisit the unobtainium situation with tech at the moment and look at the RTX 3060 launch.
Yep.
And we're going to have to come back to this M1 SSD issue again. And we're not going to discuss it at length in this video. I've got a few thoughts I'd like to share, but we want to do another video and we want to collect some data. And we need your help with this, guys.
Yeah, it's a hot topic.
It is. So that's what's coming up in the podcast. But we're going to get started with some comments, please, Pete.
Yeah, so thanks for all your comments from last week's video. And we were indeed talking about SSDs and the M1. And Shreyan asks, after watching that video, now I'm confused, because we talked about if you're a serious user, you're probably wise to wait before you go out and purchase one of these as a professional user. He says, now I'm confused, he or she, sorry, I don't know. Should I get a Mac M1? I'd be using it for web development and general tasks. So good question. And I guess it really comes down to, you know, first of all, is this a professional machine for you? Is this going to be your source of income? Or is it, you know, you can just be doing a bit of web development on the side, and what level of web development, and what do you mean by general tasks? But what would you say to that, Dave?
Well, I'd say, just to be clear, so everyone understands, the reason why we say that is because a professional user who's doing heavyweight creative work, which is our sphere of influence. So when we're talking about professionals, we're talking about creatives. You know, web development is a good example. Web design, graphic design, animation, video production, photography, those kind of disciplines, audio as well, actually. That's what we're talking about when we say sort of heavyweight professional use. Most professionals would not dream of jumping headfirst into a brand new platform like this. Most professionals wouldn't even install the latest operating system until it had been out in the wild for probably 6 months to a year, so they can see the bugs worked out. So what you've got with the M1 is a situation where you've not only got a complete change of the hardware, you've also got this brand new operating system. So it's a perfect storm of possibility for problems. And there are problems. Let's be clear. There are problems with the M1. Not necessarily game stoppers or anything. Depends what you're doing, but there are issues. So hence what you were just saying, Pete, you know, if it's going to be your main source of income, you might want to, you know, think about that. Do you need the speed and performance of the M1 is another question. Most people actually won't see the speed and performance of the M1 if they're just doing general computing tasks, you know.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. Web development, some things are just not ready yet on the M1 platform. Virtualization, if you want to use things like Docker and other containerization, virtualization, things like that. I'm not convinced it's quite there. It's not quite ready yet. Mm. And you may, it depends what type of web development you're doing, but you may be better off with an Intel machine at the moment.
Yeah, so do your homework and proceed with caution, I think, if you're going to rely on that machine. But thanks, good question. A few asking how you check data writes to the SSD or the data units written. And I know you mentioned this in the comments, but and this kind of ties into what we're planning to talk about in future videos, but just a quick summary of the utilities you're using on Mac and Windows to do that for those who've been asking, because there was quite a few asking in the comments.
Okay, so if you're on Windows, you can just there's a free piece of software called Crystal Disk. They have a benchmark tool and an information tool which will give you that in. All it's doing is reading the smart data off the hard disk controller, the SSD controller. For the Mac, you would use a command line tool usually called Smart Monitor Tools, which you need to install. And there's a couple of ways of installing that. You can either go and get the installer package, or you can do it through Homebrew. But if the command line is something that causes you a little bit of consternation, don't worry. What we're going to do is a little how-to video, which we're going to put up on the podcast channel. So we'll show you how to do it. So if you can just bear with us a few days once we get that sorted out, and we'll put that up, because we're really interested to get that data, as we'll talk about a bit later.
Yeah, definitely. So Shapeshifter Boogie, which is possibly one of the coolest YouTuber handles that I've come across, went on a little bit of a rant just about the frustrations that we're having about, because we were talking last week about professionals not going out and getting these machines yet, for all the reasons we stated just a moment ago and all the reasons we discussed last week. But Shapeshifter Boogie's view is the same as ours. There's a lot of frustration about the amount of YouTube channels out there recommending things that people then go out who aren't informed, thinking that they are now informed, and going and buying stuff, not just Macs, you know, other tech as well, without them really realizing what's involved. And, you know, YouTube insists on, if there's paid promotions in a video, you have to state it, but it should almost have a, what is being presented in this video is just opinion, you know, and in some cases, wishful thinking and fairy dust, which is true in some cases. But it does go back to what we were saying about, you know, how we run the channels, and accountability and responsibility is something we take seriously rather than just going for the clicks.
Yeah, absolutely. We've spoken about this a number of times, so I could rant about this all evening for the entire duration of the podcast, but it does my head in. There's a lot of YouTubers actually that I used to watch, and I stopped watching their channels and stopped subscribing to them over the way that they've covered the M1. And I totally get it. You know, I imagine that there are people out there who think you start a YouTube channel and you make a whole bunch of cash off of it. And you really don't. You really don't. I'm just going to tell you what I make off the channel. I think that's the way forward. So on a really good month for me.
Can you fuel the helicopter?
Well, if you can fuel a helicopter for somewhere between £400 and £500, that's about as high as it's got for me so far in a month. And, you know, we do a podcast every week. There's probably 2 days of editing each week, plus I do another video each week, if not more than. So I'm not making any money off of YouTube, and I'm buying equipment to review. We don't make money. So we do this because we love the subject, and because we want to share with other people, and it's rewarding. It's a creative process.
It is, and be honest, you love talking to me every Sunday evening and filming this stuff.
I can't think of anything I'd rather do on a Sunday evening, Pete, than talk to you. Those guys, you know, they start the YouTube, they start to see a bit of success, so they quit their jobs and become full-time YouTubers, and they got to pay their bills, they got to pay their rent and everything else, and the way to get people into the channel is to, you know...
Yeah. So I think it's probably fair to say that, you know, we're not in that position where we're desperate to quit our jobs and become full-time YouTubers. Happy to do as much as you know, we enjoy, but as you say, it's a creative process. So that in itself kind of gives us that editorial freedom to say things as they are, rather than worrying about clickbaiting and viewer numbers and that kind of thing. Although, you know, we do appreciate subscribers and comments and engagement, but hopefully that's coming because we're giving that slightly more rationed viewpoint. So anyway, thank you for that. Also tends to agree that I might be onto something with the XDR design language being reserved for the pro stuff. So
yeah, I think you might have predicted that well. We do quite well with our predictions, actually, Pete. I'm very satisfied to say that I had quite a few extra subs coming in on the main channel. And I had a comment the other day from someone who'd sort of gone and watched the back catalogue and watched the predictions video that we did. And, of course, we got them all spot on. So I engaged smug mode for a little while.
Smug mode.
Yeah, very, very enjoyable. But I don't think that's because we've got any kind of special inside track. We've also suggested things that didn't happen. But what we try to do is just look at things logically. Yeah. There's a particular video. I'm not going to name the channel, but everyone's going to know which channel I talk about when I say this. But there's a video that's gone up with thumbnails of new IMAX in kind of pastel colours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a prediction, apparently, that we're going to have sort of like a pastel pink IMAX.
Well, Shapeshifter Boogie does mention that, actually. I was actually going to just mention that in my comments here. Okay. Similar to the iPad Air.
Do you think... Sorry, we're talking over each other. Apologies. The iPad Air is it's quite a subtle colour, because I got quite excited about that, as you know, and I bought one for my wife, Michelle. I bought the blue one. And as I predicted when I did my video review on the iPad, which almost nobody watched, the colour is just not noticeable as soon as you put the case on. Mm. And it's very subtle as well. It is really silver. So the thumbnail that I've seen is kind of like this.
It's sort
of spectrum of girly pastel colours. And I think, look, let's be reasonable and logical. Will Apple make a coloured iMac? Maybe.
Well, they have before.
Yeah, they have before. That's true. Will it be sort of pastel pink? I don't know. I could be wrong on this. I hope I'm wrong. I hope you can go and buy a pastel pink iMac, because that will just add gravitas and professionalism to the range.
It would be like wearing flip-flops to an interview, wouldn't it? Yeah. No, I love it.
Actually, if you wore flip-flops to an interview at Apple, you'd probably get the job on that basis.
You probably would. I like that suggestion. We'll have to wait and see. If there are subtle, you know, like the Air, you know, quite subtle, I could see people going for that. Why not? We need something to cheer us up these days. Black and silver. You got a pink MacBook Air?
I would just say when you're sat at an iMac, bear in mind the designs that everyone's talking about for the iMac don't involve loads of metal on the front of the iMac, do they?
No.
They involve basically a big screen with very narrow bezels. So you're not going to see any of the colour if they make it coloured. Just saying.
Well, it depends where you're buying it and where you put it.
Well, I suppose if you bought one for somebody else that you sit opposite, then you could look at it all day, couldn't you, and enjoy it?
I've got a pink one coming for you. Anyway,
Pete, if they release a pink iMac, you know we're going to have to get one.
Yeah, no.
Just not for me, but as some kind of like punishment. We'll have to have it at the studio as some sort of punishment. So whoever,
yeah, like the new sippy cup of shame. Do you remember that?
I do remember it, yeah. Yeah, anyone who broke a glass got to have a baby sippy cup of shame.
Until the next person broke or spilt something. Yeah, that was good. Can't do that in the COVID. Can't do that in a COVID world, unfortunately. So that's gone. Yeah. Anyway,
we're great employers.
We are.
Shall we get into the tech topics?
Well, I just wanted to just say Archivist 42 as well. Looks like he's got a quite an active channel. Looks like some really good videos there, including some assessments of the M1 on various gaming and stuff like that. Really interesting, like your channel. But he got an M1 without replacing his MacBook Pro 16 to see how good it was. But because he relies on his MacBook Pro 16 to do his work, he wasn't going to be a muppet and just replace it outright. So again, someone like us who's taking a measured approach and used the word astounded that others had just gone down that route of replacing their equipment. So thanks for that, Archivist. And lots of love for Rafi.
Ah, Rafi. Sat up there on the guitar.
Yeah, there he is.
Let's get him down. And again, if you're listening to the audio only podcast, you won't be able to see it. My crocheted, knitted giraffe soft toy that my wife made for me. I have actually asked her whether she might be interested in making one in Constant Geekery colours that we could maybe do as a giveaway But I suspect after all the comments I've made about driving and speeding, she probably won't now. So
she's far too busy.
In mind.
Mm. Far too busy. So lots of comments. Thanks for that.
Mm. Hey, let's talk about the highly relevant Sinclair ZX81. And let's see if we can connect this bad boy to the M1 chip. But I'll let you wax lyrical first.
So on March the 5th, which will be this Friday if you're listening to the podcast in its first week after it goes up, March the 5th, 2021, it will be 40 years to the day since the ZX81 was released in 1981.
I should say, Pete, before you go too much further, it's possible that some outside of the UK won't be familiar with the Sinclair ZX81.
Right. So let me explain what a Sinclair ZX81 was. So we're talking about how to describe it. Think about a piece of black toast, you know, very badly burnt toast, with membrane-type keys in sort of pale grey on top of that black toast. And that's what a ZX81 was. So it was a little keyboard with a 9-volt power supply, a TV modulator out, and a RAM expansion port on the back, a big fat thing. And
it was a home microcomputer.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a Z80.
Yeah. And it was preceded by the ZX80, which came out just before it, and that was £100. It was beige. It was not as pretty, but the ZX81 was the Darth Vader of the lineup. And that was a lot cheaper as well, £69.95 at the time, which is about £260-70 today.
And in dollars, was that $350 maybe?
Something like that. And yeah.
Today's money.
Home computer. It had an awesome 1K of RAM.
It was upgradable.
It was upgradable to 16K of RAM. So you could get this expansion pack that would plug in the back, and it was a big chunky thing. And I had one of those.
Wasn't it vertical, Pete, as well? So you got your...
Yeah, so you had the...
Sort of stack up like a tower out the back.
Your key like that, and it went in like that. And because it was really badly designed, what used to happen is it used to any kind of movement and you'd lose the 16K and your machine would crash and that kind of thing. So you basically had to sort of jury rig it with blue tack, because basically the RAM pack would go in, but there was no support for it underneath. So its tendency, because it was quite weighty, was just to pull back. So you needed to sort of support it. So it helped you not only to learn how to program, but also to become a structural engineer, which is really good.
I got to say, because it's quite amusing. Of course, all of the enthusiast magazines at the time were recommending the blue tack fix. And I'm pretty sure Sir Clive Sinclair was interviewed and he was asked about it. And he had to then offer up the blue tack fix himself.
At least he didn't, you know, if Steve Jobs had been the one response, so he'd probably just say you're plugging it in wrong or something like that. But yeah, the keys were another thing. So, you know, we got nice action keyboards these days, but this was like this really fine membrane. So here's my impression, and you won't be able to see this, Dave, but here's my impression of how to type something on a ZX81 for those watching on YouTube.
So Pete is probably just broken his fingers there, but
yeah.
we get the point. You had to be quite... robust in your typing action.
Yeah, there was no clickety click.
No, Pete, do you remember what it used to do every time you typed, every time you pressed a key? Or has your brain sort of...
Well, it was 40 years ago, and I have to state that I didn't get one in 1981 because I was five. In fact, I was probably 4.5. No, I was 4.5 when it came out.
Now
everyone knows how old I am, but go on.
You're ancient. The screen used to flick on and off, didn't it? Every time you pressed a key. You remember that?
I don't remember that, but it probably did.
Was that only on the ZX80? Maybe that was only the ZX80. It was rubbish, though.
Well, yes, it was. It was rubbish. But, and you know, I have to state as well, when you got it, it came in a black cardboard box, quite quite nice packaging for the day. You know, we get used to nice packaging today, like your monitor the other day, which I have to say was, that's lush. Worth looking at that on the Constant Geekery main channel. That's youtube.com/Constant Geekery. A nice portable monitor review there. But yeah, you had this kind of futuristic Blade Runner-esque illustration on the front of the box. And all the programming magazines that came out after that were all very scientific, science-y, fiction-y, neon-tron 80s illustrations that kind of gave you this promise of wonder. And then you get things like Lunar Lander and things like that. It was dire. But it taught a whole generation of kids how to program.
It did. I got to say, I just want to cycle back to the packaging, because in the computer itself, it was quite a challenge. As each key had, was it four or five different functions?
Yeah.
So it was a design challenge. They won a design award for it. And I did, because you said this to me, and we'd be talking about this today, I did go on eBay and have a look. And on eBay UK, I found a mint in-box ZX81. And I also found a mint in-box kit ZX81. And this is the important thing to know, is that for £20 less, maybe £69.95 might have been the kit price, I'm not sure. But you could have it assembled, or you could have it as a kit and make it yourself, you know, solder the parts on. Or sadly, as some purchasers did, super glue them in and then wonder why it wasn't working. It was brilliant. Sinclair started out like that, though. They were making kits. You know, you could get a calculator kit, and they did a scientific calculator with reverse Polish notation. And, you know, it was cool stuff. And their little TV that they did, wild. And their packaging, I looked at those boxes on eBay, and it still looks great.
Yeah.
You know, if you went and bought something today, you wouldn't think, oh, that looks really dated. It doesn't look dated.
No. It has stood
the test of time. Well-deserved design award.
Mm. It has stood the test of time. And, yeah, it created this generation of programmers. And it was basic, but that's, you know, where a lot of people start to learn their craft, or at least it used to be. Mm. And it generated a thirst for what was possible, certainly for me, and a drive for more and better. Because, of course, that then took you on to, not long after that, you know, the Spectrums and the Commodores all started coming out, then the Ataris and the Amigas. And it just drove people to be innovative. It was a great time for, you know, games and coding and all that kind of thing. And it has helped us to get where we are today.
It has. They were great computers. I never personally got into it. My brother had a ZX Spectrum, I think, for a while. I never liked the keyboard, and when you got the ZX Spectrum, you know, it was rubber keys. I never liked that, and I never understood why a computer that was basically named after its color palette, you know, and the fact it could do color, was so spectacularly bad at doing color.
Yeah,
because it used to have the way it did it is the color information wasn't in the pixels in the bitmaps on the screen. You sort of had this. If you imagine the matrix of pixels on the screen, you had a much larger matrix of color blocks.
Yeah.
And each color block could have two colors. So unless those color blocks were next to each other, you couldn't display more than two colors next to each other. And it's why when you move your character around, it sort of just, it had to take on the color that was being.
Yeah.
I probably haven't done a very good job of explaining that, but it was a way of getting more out of less, because the Spectrum was still a Z80 processor. Mm-hmm. I think it was 1/4 of a megahertz faster than the ZX81, and it came out with 16K of RAM and then later 48K. But it's the thing about the Spectrum was that it was so cheap.
Yeah.
And Clive Sinclair was really onto something with that. So can I do a link between these computers and the M1 chip?
Yeah, do it, because that's what everyone wants to hear.
Yes. So I'm going to go so far as to say that if it weren't for Sinclair, we might not even have an M1.
Great Scott!
So how do we get to that? Well, what was happening was the government in the UK had formed something, I think it was called the National Enterprise Board, was it? NEB. And they were looking at what was going on in the States. You know, you had Commodore on the rise with the PET and other computers, and they felt that Britain was being left behind. So the NEB had bought out companies like Sinclair. They owned a controlling share in Sinclair. They also held a controlling share in another company called Newbury. And the NEB wanted to make a computer, a home computer, which they called the New Brain. And this computer was going to sell for, I don't know, £220, £230. So if you apply inflation to that, you're probably talking about a grand, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, about that.
Yeah. And Clive Sinclair wasn't happy about this because he felt that the computer needed to be cheaper than that.
Mm.
It wasn't going to sell at that price. He wanted to get it to less than £100. So that's what he achieved with the original ZX80. So he formed a separate company to the company that the NEB had a share in, and then he used that company to basically create these new computers. When the New Brain finally did release, it was a flop because it was too expensive and it took too long to come to market.
Mm.
And if memory serves, I think it didn't come out till 84. I could be wrong on that.
Oh, right. Okay.
But the Newbury New Brain, as it then became, was the computer that was originally going to be the BBC's computer for the BBC's computer literacy project.
Was it?
And because I can't remember all the details, but they couldn't get it ready in time or something or other. And maybe someone in the comments can fill in the story there, because I haven't done any major research prior to this episode. But in the end, they didn't tender, and that opened the door for Acorn Computer to tender. And Acorn was a company that was set up partially by Chris Curry, who had previously been working for Clive Sinclair and got frustrated because Clive wouldn't do the computer projects he wanted to do. It's all in very incestuous. So Acorn Computers is the company that then won the BBC project. So in the UK, you had these BBC Micros that were made by Acorn, and they made a home version called the Electron, which is, I had one of those. That's what I learned to program on. And when they were looking for a successor to the BBC Micro, which was going to be their Archimedes range of computers, they went to MOS, which was the chip manufacturer that they'd been using, and they couldn't get what they wanted. So the guys at Acorn were just like, well, we'll make our own chip then. And so the Acorn RISC machine was born. And a year later, that got siphoned off into its own company, Advanced RISC Machines. Hence, the ARM processor was born. Apple had a 46% share in that company, along with Acorn, in the early days. I think they sold it off when they hit hard times in the late 90s. But Apple were involved with ARM back then. They're involved with ARM now, and they're producing processors based on ARM that arguably would never have happened if Acorn didn't win the BBC contract, which they wouldn't have got if the Newbury had been done on time, which didn't happen because Clive Sinclair didn't support it and undermined it with a super cheap home computer, the ZX80.
There you go. I think that's Look at that.
That's got to be worth a round of applause for the most tenuous link ever.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Just imagine, without that, there'd be no NVIDIA, there'd be no Apple. We'd be living in a technological drought.
I wonder what would happen, though, because you've got the likes of, you know, Commodore. I mean, you think, like, what could have happened if Commodore wasn't so mismanaged? What about the Amiga? What could have happened there?
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Something to explore at some point in the future, perhaps.
But I think so. We would like to do a more in-depth film on these sort of histories and things, but we'd like to do it as a proper documentary, and that involves location shooting, which is just not possible.
Being in the same space and don't even want that after COVID, do you? But Clive Sinclair, the Elon Musk of his time, and of course he did come out with an electric vehicle well ahead of its time.
He did.
Yeah. So if any of you are curious to know about an electric vehicle from the 80s that, you know, really was the Tesla of its day, have a look at the Sinclair C5. If you know what it is, you'll probably be chuckling. If not, have a chuckle. And again, maybe we should try and get one of those at one point for the channel.
I'd love to have a go in one. Not on a highway, obviously.
No.
because I value my life. But yeah, I don't think it's got a lot in common with a Tesla. And let's be honest, other than the fact there's batteries and wheels.
Yeah, and it's on the planet Earth. Actually, that's not true of every Tesla. But yeah, so 40 years of ZX81. And thank you, Sir Clive Sinclair, because I think you whether you liked it or hated it, it was a catalyst for a lot of things that mean we are here now doing this in this format with these memories. So thank you for that.
It was an amazing achievement. I mean, I'm just working off dim and dusty memories, but I think the ZX80 maybe sold like 50,000 units or something like that in a year. And the ZX81, I'm sure, did something like 1.5 million.
Yes.
In the following year.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible success.
And the ZX Spectrum went on to sell in huge quantities. And in fact, there is a company that is making Spectrums, the Spectrum Next. Have you seen that?
I have heard of it. Yeah, I haven't done any looking into it. Mm-hmm. But it has to be said as well, £69.95 or £266. I mean, today we live in a world where there is great poverty and there is a lot of deprivation, but there's also a lot more people with disposable income. But back in the 80s, you know, £266 was a lot of money in terms
it
of
was.
We're talking about buying power, but what we're talking about is availability of that money as free money. So to get a ZX81 or, you know, a Commodore 64 a bit later, which was, I think, was about £150 from memory, something like that, were huge sums of money for our parents to pay out. And that's what my parents did, and I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up, so my introduction to the Acorn Electron came a lot later, many years after it had been released. There was much better stuff on the market by then, but it was what we could afford, and, you know, I started a whole career off of that.
Yeah.
So
you had a few false starts, though, didn't you, when your dad said to you, "Son, I've got you an Acorn one day."
Do you know what? We actually bought it off another family. We borrowed it for a while, and my mum and dad actually played this terrible Pac-Man clone that they had. They originally just completely ripped off Pac-Man, but then obviously Namco weren't happy about that, so it ended up being called Snapper.
Right.
And they changed the shape of the maze, so it wasn't as good, but it was fun to play. Yeah. Anyway,
we're reminiscing.
These kind of jaunts down memory lane don't work out well usually, so let's move on.
No,
I want to talk about
pubic hair,
or something similar, which is the RTX 3060 launch. I don't know why I said that. There's nothing similar about it.
No. So
NVIDIA have, for the longest time, actually, they've had a 60 series card. That's their kind of, you know, that's the mid-level gaming point. So I can remember 760, 960, 1060, 2060. So it goes on. And now we have the 3060. And at the launch, you know, they're sort of talking about an MSRP of $330.
Yeah. It's reasonable.
Which, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's still more than it's been before. It looks like a great card. It really does. But it was out of stock in less than 30 seconds everywhere. And this leads to a wider subject. I mean, the 3060 itself, there's a couple of nasty things in here that Jay's Two Cents picked up on this, I think, where the NVIDIA were linking through to manufacturers' websites. So just to be clear, with the 3060, there's no Founders Edition, so there's no NVIDIA branded card. It's all AIB or system manufacturers. So they link through to these various vendors, or, you know, going through to stores like Newegg and stuff, and it would go through to the card at the appropriate price.
Yeah.
But if you go directly to the website and look for the card, you find it at a higher price.
What?
Hmm.
So scalping going on again.
Yeah. Once again, the retailers are scalping. Retailers scalping. And this is going on across all sorts of tech. So first of all, you've got people who are buying this, or bots buying groups who are getting hold of these and then putting them on eBay and selling them for vastly inflated prices. So that's scalping.
Yeah.
But the retailers are doing it as well. And I think if a retailer is doing it, it's not scalping anymore. It's profiteering. Let's call it what it is.
Yep.
You know, it's pretty disgusting behavior as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed.
And Yes, the simple truth is you just cannot get any of this stuff. It's not just the 3060. You go on to, I mean, I double-checked again before coming on to record the podcast, and I went on a few major retailers, and you can't buy anything. There's no NVIDIA cards unless you want a 1030, and nobody wants a 1030. There's no AMD cards at all. It's just nothing.
No.
You can't get the 5000 series cards either.
No.
In fact, go on eBay and you'll find a 5700 XT anywhere from £600 to £800 used.
Yeah.
You know, I think I paid £400 new for mine.
I went on eBay, eBuyer, just before we started, 3060, 3070, 3080, 3090, plus the Ti variants. Nada. Not a sausage.
No. It's so frustrating. And CPUs as well.
Yep.
In short supply. So AMD's new series that they launched, the Zen 3 chips last year, you are starting to get them now. I see the 5800 is in stock. But if you want a 5900 or a 5950, forget it. They're just not around. And again, all of the retailers are scalping those, profiteering on them, charging them at higher than MSRP. And if you want any of these things, it's like you've got to go and buy a laptop. If you want a gaming PC at the moment, you either sit in a very long queue for the parts, or you sit in a long queue for a pre-build, or you get a pre-build with something crummy in like a, well, not crummy, but lower grade, like a 1660 card or something like that. Or you buy a laptop.
Deliberate, do you think?
No, I think it's just part of the silicon shortage and the fact that people are mining with the desktop cards because Bitcoin has gone stratospheric and it sort of pulled Ethereum up with it, and you can still mine Ethereum with graphics cards.
Yeah.
And it can be profitable. I think if you're down to about 10 cents a kilowatt or something, you can make it profitable. So people are buying these things, but they're not going to be profitable for very long.
No. And actually, I read an interesting article the other day that, you know, are these things contributing? I think it's, you know, a bigger discussion and not one I want to go into too much detail now, but are these, you know, contributing to, you know, more energy? Well, obviously more energy usage, but to more carbon, all that kind of stuff in this desire. They create heat, they use a lot of energy.
Yeah, that could be their undoing. I saw something on the news, and again, I don't know if it's true. I haven't checked it or not, but what the news article said was that mining, so cryptocurrency mining, is using more energy than the entire country of Argentina.
Wow.
So, you know, you tell me if you think that's a good thing for the world. You know, we don't want to get political here.
But there is this silicon shortage globally, isn't there? And it's not just GPUs and CPUs. So you've got a demand for silicon, you know, chips going into cars, you know, all sorts of cars. I mean, if you've ever sat in a Tesla or any EV, I mean, they're festooned. They look like the Starship Enterprise.
Well, the old cars are like that now. My wife's Toyota has got a fully digital dash. Volvo's got a fully digital dash. That's the way it goes now. It's all computer controlled, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, when you think about that's a massive demand. You've then got the 5G rollout. Whatever you might think about that, don't want to get into anything on that. But, you know, there's a demand there for chips and things to power all the various devices required to support that network. It's just massive.
It is massive, and this is the problem. Silicon wafers take a long time to make. I think this. I did some research when I was researching the SSD stuff, and the silicon wafers for SSDs take about 30 days to make. And there are only a few people making them, and, you know, it's a long, difficult process. It's made much harder by the global pandemic, and of course, people being at home, twiddling their thumbs, thinking,
I know,
can't spend my money on going out. I'm going to buy a gaming machine. And if that's you, I'm so sorry for you at the moment. I really am. What a terrible time to get into gaming, because it's not like you can even go out and get a gaming console either. That's the other unobtainium. No, the new Xbox, can't buy that.
No.
New PlayStation, no.
No.
Forget that. And even if you do manage to get your gaming machine and you manage to, you know, spend the couple of weeks it's required to download Microsoft Flight Simulator, if you want to go and get yourself a flight yoke or some controllers, you can't get any of that either. I managed to actually get...
Did you get a flight yoke? This, Pete. How exciting.
We're not doing the egg jokes again.
No.
We're not doing the egg jokes again. Look at this. I got myself, Pete, an Airbus.
Really?
An Airbus authorized flight stick. No, hang on.
That's probably the only thing they're making at the moment.
And look at that, throttle controls.
Look at, wow. Well.
So if you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see that. If you're not, then what I've got is the Thrustmaster Airbus pilot set. And that's really good. But I only got that because I bought it direct from Thrustmaster and I just happened to get in at the right time when they had some in stock. And it went out of stock again almost immediately after I bought it. So that was just a pure fluke. Most places you can't get any of this stuff. Let me just put this down.
Thrustmaster's an interesting product name. It sounds like the sort of QVC-esque exercise device that you often see, you know, get the Thrustmaster to get your core and buttocks into shape.
Thank you for that mental image, Pete.
But yeah, it is a sucky time if you're getting into tech or getting into gaming. So go on to eBay and get yourself a ZX81 and then you'll always appreciate a keyboard. That's what I will say.
That's that. Well, I want to bring this topic back to M1 as well, because here's my question to you, Pete, and I don't know if you can answer this for me, but how come we've got all of this shortage, but you can still buy an M1? How come how come nobody is scalping the M1?
Do you know, that's a really good question. And I guess when it comes to the M1, Apple obviously put their order in and maybe made sure that they had enough, you know, simple business planning. Good question on the scalping, though. I suppose because it's supply and demand, isn't it? If you haven't got enough of something, people will pay over the odds for it. So if you couldn't get an M1 for love nor money, people probably would be able to scalp on them. But you can.
You can. And we've even seen, I don't know if Amazon are still doing it, but Amazon were selling the MacBook Pro at about £80 or £90 off in the UK, the M1. So it's actually going the other way with the Mac. So I can't explain it either, but nobody seems to be scalping these machines. Apple seems to have got their supply in order. In fairness, there are longer wait times than usual, I would say, for some models. But there are models that are immediately available.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, AMD made a big song and dance recently with their new Zen 3 mobile CPUs, which do look amazing. They do look amazing, but none of the laptops are available yet. And I suspect they'll all disappear as soon as they become available.
Mm.
I hope not, because there's one I got my eye on.
Have you?
I have.
Is it the Flow book?
My wallet is cringing at the moment. It's the Flow, yeah. It looks so good. So, did we talk about this last week?
I think we might. You mentioned it in passing, so I did do a bit of Googleage.
It just looks like it's a 13-inch notebook with an 8-core CPU.
Yeah.
In fairness, the CPU is not quite benching as high as the M1. I suspect in real world it would probably be close to the M1.
Yeah.
In fact, I know it would exceed the M1 for things like Cinebench. It's quite a way ahead, actually. So there are some things where the AMD chip would be a lot faster. And they've put a 1650 Ti in that 13-inch notebook, but then it's got this sort of eGPU with the RTX 3080 mobile version.
Yeah.
And that, you know, yeah, I like the idea of that as a little portable gaming machine / video editing rig, but it is nearly $3,000.
Yeah. Not cheap. It's not cheap.
It's not. But then, you know, how much? I think I paid a bit more than that for that 15-inch MacBook Pro with the i9 in it.
True.
That's been beaten in every area by the M1, rather depressingly. So,
yeah, but there we go. It's
there we go.
It is what it is.
So our third topic is regarding the SSD. We need to come back to this with the M1. So when I first made the video on the main channel, people had noticed, including ourselves, and we'd said it in a number of previous videos, is that the M1 does seem to swap or use its swap memory more than Intel machines do.
Yeah.
And we'd seen that. I don't think there's any dispute over that. And I don't think it's really a massive mystery as to why it's doing that either, you know, particularly on the 8 gigabyte model where you've got 8 gigs of RAM that's being shared between everything on the system on chip, including the CPU, the machine learning cores, and the GPU. So stands to reason, if you start doing really heavyweight work that needs more RAM than 8 gigs, it's going to swap like crazy.
Hmm.
The problem is it's so good at it that you don't notice it's doing it.
No.
And you think it's... And so you've got then all these, which is what our commenter was talking about earlier, all these YouTubers saying 8 gigs on an M1 is like 16 gigs on an Intel and blah, 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 and all of these other things. And it's like, well, yeah, as it turns out, not really. There's a price to be paid for this performance.
Yeah, there always is.
Hmm.
You can't magic things up out of nowhere. There are physics.
That's it. There are physics, yes, unfortunately. So that was the problem that I was specifically addressing. And I was looking at the life cycle of a SSD, and how it can seem like the manufacturer's warranties are really small. But actually, when you do the math, they last for a long time, and arguably a lot longer than spinning hard disks ever did.
Hmm.
And I think it's worth saying as well, actually, and you speak to any repair center or anybody who works in IT, and SSDs do not fail like hard disks used to. SSD failure is not a common thing still.
Yeah.
And SSD technology has come on a long way since those early machines, which are still working. You were talking about your 2012 MacBook Air.
Yeah. Still going strong.
Yeah. So it's really... These SSDs can take it. What is coming out of the woodwork, though, is reports of massive disk writing from different tasks on the machine when you're not actually doing anything.
Right.
And so people are reporting this, and I say people, it's a few people, are reporting this massive amount of data being written to the SSD and are rightly concerned about that. I think the problem is that it's not a huge number of people that are complaining. And if you go and Google it, what you find is loads and loads of articles on tech websites, but they're all pointing to the same forum posts.
Yeah.
It's all referencing the same material. So it looks like there's this massive issue, but actually, no, it's still these few. And if you spend any time reading through those forum posts, what you find is there's just as many people who are saying, I don't have any issue. There isn't an issue. There's a smattering of people who are saying my 8 gigabyte M1 is not able to transcode media all day in my professional video studio without writing it. Well, okay. I'm sorry, but we'll dismiss that because that's just plain stupidity. And there are, in fact, also, I've seen at least three people with Intel Macs running Big Sur who are having the same problem.
There we go.
So, well, I just...
It's what I call the TripAdvisor mentality. Do you know what I mean by that? You know, you go on and there's one or two people flagging up that for them and their workflow and their situation, they're having a problem. And then everyone ignores the massive counterbalance of people saying, I'm not having a problem. And go with, you know, sensationalizing the ones that do. And it's the same, you know, we all do it. You go onto a TripAdvisor review of a restaurant or a hotel or whatever it is, and it can have loads of glowing reviews. You know, it could have, in some cases, thousands. And what do? You filter on the one stars because you want to see what's bad. And then you go, oh, one day someone had a cold roast potato. I'm not sure we should go there.
And there seems found to be a pubic hair in their bed. I had to get a pubic hair in again, Pete.
better in the bed than on the potato. But the I probably would draw the line at a restaurant at that point. But my point is that why do we fixate on the negative? You know, there are always going to be failures in devices. You've got to recover now. There are always going to be failures in devices. No tech is perfect. But is this SSD swap issue thing just getting blown out of all proportions? And that's what we want to find out, isn't it? In some kind of scientific research-based way rather than Reddit posts.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. And I'm not in any way downplaying the issue for those that have got it. You know, that's obviously going to be a concern.
Hmm.
What I can say is my M1 doesn't have it. And, you know, I don't use my M1 day in, day out, but it has been put to a lot of use. And I've used it for heavyweight stuff, testing for the channel, using heavyweight applications, writing quite a lot of data. And I checked it just before we started the podcast, and I'm up to 1.26 terabytes.
Right.
Since November. And I'm not getting this issue. So there's either something wrong with certain installs of Big Sur. There's a bug somewhere that affects certain types of software, you know, your runaway processes that are writing a load of RAM, or potentially maybe a hardware issue, maybe a hardware fault with some of these chips. So if that's the case, we'd like to get to the bottom of that. You know, for those people who are affected by it, you know, they want to get that sorted out. And I think if you are one of those affected by it, my advice to you would be contact Apple support. You know, don't get upset over it. Just let's work the problem and get a solution. And I suspect the first thing Apple support will tell you to do is to reinstall your Mac, install a fresh copy of the OS. And to be honest, that's the first thing I would do if I saw this behavior on mine. I'd restore it and start putting the software on and see what causes the issue.
Yeah. Methodical. Problem solving.
Yeah. That's it. We've got to be reasonable. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to do another video for the channel, and it needs to be done carefully because a lot of people are upset about this and getting concerned and are worried about it. And I've had comments from a number of people who are very worried, and I know some of them are in parts of the world where buying one of these computers here must have been a massive investment for them. Massive. Yeah. And in these same parts of the world, they don't enjoy the same consumer
rights.
Protection. Mm. Yeah. So I do feel for these guys. And, you know, you get some of them are just desperately worried. And actually, the numbers that they're giving you, you look at it and you do the math and you go, well, you haven't got anything to be worried about at all. Your SSD is going to outlast your computer. But because they're seeing this negativity and because it's being constantly
amplified.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Echoed.
Yeah, by YouTubers looking for clicks.
Yep.
Yeah. I think people are getting to the point where they're getting concerned and they maybe don't need to be.
Yeah, agree.
So I think if your laptop is writing consistently, on average, more than 50 gigabytes a day, consistently, then you're probably in a position where you need to investigate what's going on. But not within the first couple of weeks of ownership, because we spend a whole load of time on our computers when they're new and shiny, and we download all sorts of stuff and install loads of apps and copy data and everything else. So, of course, it's going to be higher during that first period. But if over a longer period you're consistently seeing these high levels of data writes and you're not doing anything to warrant it, then perhaps there's a fault and it needs to be investigated.
Yeah. So what's the plan?
So we'll do a video where we'll cover off some reasonable logic and also why I think that the SSD in the Apple is going to last much, much longer than some 150 terabytes written. Excuse me. That and I've seen data and I'm fairly convinced of that. So I think that these devices have a long lifespan anyway. And we said we would do a how-to video,
yep,
which we'll put on the podcast channel. And we'll demonstrate how to install the tools and how to check it. It's really simple to do. Don't be afraid of the command line. We'll show you how to do it. And then what we'd like for people to do is to comment on either channel on YouTube and just let us know their details. You know, what spec they've got, when they bought it, roughly what they're doing with it, and then the key figures that we're going to ask for. And you and I will then have to trawl through the comments.
Which we do anyway.
And we'll collate that data, get it up into a spreadsheet, and see if we can get some reasonable data out of it, you know, and get an idea of what's going on and how widespread the problem is. But in order for us to do that, the TripAdvisor thing, you know, people are more likely to leave a negative review than they are a positive one.
Yeah.
Probably 10 times more likely, something like that. So what we don't want is for only people who think they've got a problem to try this, because if we do that, then our data will be skewed.
We need control data. We need a representative sample, because we don't know what we're going to see out of this, do we? We genuinely want to see what's going on.
That's it. And, you know, if we've got any M1 users out there who are watching the channel, and I know that we do have loads, we need your data, please. It won't take you very long to get it, and it would be really helpful. And perhaps we can put together a bit of a resource that's of use to the community generally. And if there is a problem, if there is an actual problem, then that will be useful data for us to have, you know, and that might help get a resolution to the problem if that's needed. So watch this space, that's coming. Anyway, that's enough of that technical stuff. We need to get into the important thing, and what everyone who watches our podcast or listens to our podcast has come for, really, Pete, and that is you eating. Do you have something to eat this week?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Although I do have to say, the suggestions are running low. So unless I've missed something, this is the last suggestion that I've seen. So I'm either going to have to start making up my own, or this could be the end of Pete's Eats.
I actually forgot again to order the delights from Amazon. So maybe that will tide us over next for at least one more. And I will try and remember to do that this week.
Well, yeah. And any suggestions on, you know, the weird and the wonderful, or just the darn right tasty? I don't mind. You know, what I had last week was good. So do you know what I'm doing this week, Dave? I'm going to give you a clue. I'm going to start with that.
A spoon? Okay. Some sort of pudding or cereal?
I'm not sure how you'd describe this.
Okay.
Because I do indeed have
that. A can of baked beans. Okay. Heinz beans, no less. Not that we're sponsored by Heinz. Other cans are available.
Yeah. And
what is that?
That's the first Weetabix out of a box. A Weetabix.
Okay.
So, which is already losing its structural integrity.
Are you going to combine those two products, Pete?
Yeah. So, there was a bit of a Twitter thing that went on a couple of weeks ago where I think it was Weetabix suggested that Weetabix, or it might have been Heinz, one or the other said that a good combination is beans on Weetabix. Have you not seen this?
I'm vaguely aware of it now that you're saying it to me. Yeah.
And a few people have suggested it in the comments. So I was going to try and do it last week, but
I've got to say, you're opening that can of beans. I can hear you opening it. I can't see you doing it. You're spilling it as well. Did you pre-warm that can in somehow? You're going to eat...
Yeah, I popped it in the microwave.
You're going to eat cold beans on Weetabix, aren't you? You filthy beggar.
And the reason it's cold is because we filmed this on a Sunday evening. And... Yeah, I can't be bothered to stick them in the microwave, so I just had them ready for the whole thing. So there it is.
I can't imagine it's going to improve it anyway.
No, well, it's interesting. It did start a thing. I think Papa John's got involved and said, if you put a bit of cheese, you know, a bit of mozzarella, a bit of tomato paste, and some pepperoni on a Weetabix, you can have like a pizza bix.
And maybe that's next week.
A few others. Yeah, I could maybe do that. Anyway, I'm just going to put the mic away a bit because you don't really want to hear me crunchy. The Weetabix is just falling apart.
Weetabix is horrible stuff. All I remember is every time you get about halfway through the bowl and then you've got to go to the loo, haven't you?
It's like a trip to the Quantox.
No one's going to get that reference.
A select few might, but yeah.
Yeah. Go on, Pete.
Are you ready then?
Put it in your face hole. Get on with it. I can hear you crunching. He's assessing, licking his fingers. That's probably a good sign.
Well, I like beans. I don't dislike Weetabix.
That doesn't necessarily
mean
they...
toast.
Okay.
No, that's true. That's true, because I like pickles and I like peanut butter. But I still haven't forgotten or forgiven Graphics Pad, one of our subscribers, for that.
I'm pretty sure Graphics Pad might have suggested this as well, so...
Yeah, a few did, including, it should be noted, one of our subscribers is a member of our web studio and did suggest this. I'm not going to name him, but he knows who he is. I like beans on toast, and Weetabix is kind of a savoury thing unless you put sugar on it. So it is like having crunchy bread with beans. It's fine.
Okay. So, well, that, again, for me, was disappointing, Pete, because I much prefer the Pete Eats section where you're suffering and...
Well, I start vomiting.
That kind of thing.
Which makes me quite nervous for when you eventually do get around to doing this Amazon part.
No, honestly, I don't think it... I can't say anything, because I'll just give away the gag. It's going to be one of those things where you've got to open it on the show, and we'll just see what happens.
It's not one of those jelly beans ones where you've got nice flavours and nasty flavours, but you can't tell the difference.
This is me not saying anything. You won't get anything out of me, Pete, on this. You'll just have to wait and see. And I've been bigging it up for 2 weeks, so it's going to be an absolute letdown now.
Yeah, pretty much like everything we do. Anyway, well, on that note, the good news is we've been moaning about the weather. We've been moaning about lockdown, but we've had some good weather. In the UK, we have a tentative route out of lockdown. And I think those two things combining with the nights getting a bit lighter, we are in a more cheery place.
We are.
And hopefully that means that at some point in the not too distant future, we may be podcasting as one again in a new studio. And we look forward to that. But in the meantime, it's been lovely to chat with you all, and hopefully you've enjoyed this.
Yeah.
What else do we need to say?
I think
sign off. I've forgotten.
To sign off, nothing other than we wish you all well, and don't relax your guard, folks. The pandemic we may see the end in sight. Pete's just eating beans out of a tin now. That's really distracting. Whilst I was trying to give an informative and an encouraging word of caution to our listeners. Not to drop
like Mad Max in Mel Gibson in Mad Max, but I think that was dog food he was in.
Oh, for goodness sake. I think we ought to get you some dog food. Someone suggest that, please. I'd like to see Pete eating dog food. And I know you've got plenty of it around the house.
Okay. Here's a deal.
Oh, I don't like any deals. I only like it when
I will eat dog food if we get to 1,000 subscribers.
Okay.
Sorry, 10,000 subscribers.
No, hang on. No. We all heard you say it. Cut down now. In what
how
time
long
frame?
What?
What time frame? 1,000 subscribers.
Before the end of February.
No, that's...
Sorry. Before the end of March. We've got a month.
1,000 subs. Right, okay. 1,000 subs on the podcast channel before the end of March, which I think is eminently achievable, I'm afraid, Pete. And Pete will indeed eat dog food. You don't seem concerned about this at all. So either you know something I don't, or you've already eaten dog food and you know it's okay.
I've eaten worse than dog food. In fact, actually, I ate dog food the other day. So this is quite a funny story. I know we're rambling on, so the tech is over. If you want to go, just go. But I found some popcorn the other day. Right. And I thought, popcorn, I'll get in amongst that. So I opened it and had a mouthful. And you know when you put something, well, maybe you don't, but you eat something, you think, I don't even know what I've got in my mouth right now. This popcorn, the closest I can describe it to is cheese-flavoured popcorn.
No, that's not right.
Turns out my wife had bought some from the pet food shop, dog popcorn. But that's not the funniest and the worst thing I've done. I've drunk. So when our first child was learning to pee, the lights have gone. We'll leave that one for another day. My lights have actually all just gone out. So
pizza we'll in leave the dark it there, for the shall conclusion. We? Right. Okay. So thank you for all of that. We look forward to seeing you eat dog food. And what I was trying to say to folks is stay safe out there because there's, you know, we don't want to let our guard down and undo all the hard work. And if you are of the NHS persuasion or you're in care and you're helping everyone through the pandemic, can we say thank you very much? We really appreciate your hard work and your sacrifice. And thanks.
In fact, anyone who's in, you know, a position where they're helping out or facing these challenges, and as Dave said, please be careful. It's a nasty thing, and we want you all to be safe.
Yeah, I have to say, I was very saddened today when I saw that Fausto Grassini has died of COVID. And that might not mean anything to you, but for those people who are into motorcycle racing, that will mean something. And it just goes to show it's it can affect anybody. And anyway, let's not be too miserable about it. Let's do what we can to keep ourselves safe. I'd like to see you again next week for another podcast where we'll find some sort of tech and dog food type conversation and possibly even throw in
1,000 subscribers by the end of March 2021, and I will eat dog food on this channel.
We might even throw a couple of pubic hairs into the conversation as well. And on that note, it's been great to have you along. Thanks for watching and listening to the Constant Geekery podcast. See you next week.
Cheerio.